Well, good morning, United. Hope you're doing well. Did anybody get their extra hour of sleep last night? Anybody waste it like I did? So stay up a little bit later, wake up a little bit earlier, or maybe you have a kid and that didn't let you get that extra hour of sleep. But hopefully we're a little bit more well-rested this morning and attentive to, we're going to be talking about being united together. And we're going to be talking about from a prayer from Jesus and why that's really important for us this morning. But I love fall. I don't know, does anybody else here love the fall season? So not only because you get the fall back, the extra hour of sleep there, but also because of all the fall things. The beauty of the leaves changing, pumpkin spice. Like if you find me in Trader Joe's, you'll find me with a cart full of everything related to pumpkins. So the pumpkin cereal, the pumpkin cookies, the pumpkin everything is in my shopping cart at Trader Joe's. So I don't go shopping in the fall at Trader Joe's. My wife, it takes care of that so we don't have pumpkin stuff all through our house. But I love, one of the things I love best about the fall is fall sports. So I'm a soccer player, and so fall always is the main season for soccer. But I also love watching football. And so you can watch football all weekend long, starting Friday night all the way through Sunday in the fall, because it's watching football season, and then also running. I'm a runner, and cross country is definitely more enjoyable than running laps around a track. So I think everybody can agree with who wants to watch people run laps around a track. But watching cross country might be a little bit more enjoyable, and probably some of you are thinking about running's not enjoyable at all. So I don't know what you're talking about, but I love the fall, and so I love soccer, and my kids have played soccer. I have five kids, and four out of my five kids so far have played organized soccer, and there's something that happens at the youngest ages when they start to play soccer. You throw a ball out there, and the coach says, go play soccer, and what happens? You have all the kids follow and chase the ball around, and it's just like a herd of kids that just go around the field, you know, all together with this soccer ball, and so the kids need some instruction and direction to spread out, to work together as a team, and to not all follow the soccer ball around. So as, you know, the age group progresses and kids get older, they start to spread out, and there's certain things that started to get shouted out by coaches, even parents. So I don't know, maybe you look like this parent on the sidelines where you're shouting at your child, and you know, he's picking up, Will Ferrell there is picking up the cone just to make sure he can be heard there. And there's different things like pass the ball, spread out, shoot. You have to instruct kids, but there's still that instinct that kids have, even as they grow out of the herd mentality, to still take the ball away from somebody on their own team. So my son, Liam, plays, he's 10 years old, and he plays on a soccer team with 9 and 10-year-old boys, and they've grown out of the herd mentality of chasing the ball all around the field, but they're still same team being yelled at on the field, because that's what we yell at when somebody on your own team takes the ball away from you. You hear shouts of, same team! Like, what are you doing? You took the ball from your own player, and then you kick it out of bounds, and you kind of goes against what we're trying to do here as a team. In fact, same team is a word and phrase that's going to be important for us today as we talk about united and being united together. And so I want you to say same team with me on the count of three, nice and loud, so that we can get this kind of ingrained in our minds. So on the count of three, one, two, three.
Same team.
Oh, wow, that was awesome. I didn't even have to like coach you to do that. You did a great job. So same team. And so, and same team, one of the things I've noticed about this phrase, though, is it's something that you don't grow out of. And I'm not just talking about the soccer field and as kids get older and they still take the ball away from somebody on their team. But I'm talking about in life. Like, how about sibling rivalry? You know, and, you know, you see siblings and it's like, hey, guys, we're in the same house. We all want to be a happy family together. Same team, you could say to your kids. But the reality is, even when their parents pass and they start fighting over what's left, hey, same team. We're a family, right? We need same team all throughout life. We need same team maybe in a roommate situation or people that we live with. You know, maybe you're the messy one and you get criticized for being messy. And so I see some spouses looking and nudging there, like, you're the messy one. And it's like, hey, we both want this house to look nice, right? We're in the same team together. Let's work together. But it's even more complicated than just a messy house sometimes. There's arguments and conflict that can come up, especially in a marriage. Maybe it's a marriage relationship. And this might what you feel like sometimes in your marriage. But the reality is, if there's any human relationship that's the same team and needs to hear this phrase, same team, it's a married couple. It's like, hey, we're the same team together. Let's work this out together. Because that's what same team is all about. It's about we want to work through challenges and difficulties together. And so married couples need to hear same team. People that you work with, You need to say sometimes that you work on a project with people at work. Hey, we're on the same team together. And so this guy needed that encouragement because he really screwed up with that sign. It's like, same team. But maybe your job fails have been a little bit more significant or serious as you work together. And same team is this phrase that I think if we live that out as Christ followers can really change the dynamic for us in our relationships, us personally, us as a church, in our community. And if we're honest with ourselves, of all the places and relationships that need to hear these words the most, it's the church. Let's be honest. Christians are not the most unified team working people around. When we started United Church just a month ago, we did some advertising on social media. You know, you pay Facebook $15 and it shares your message with some more people. And we got criticized for doing that. We got criticized as a church for doing that type of marketing, and some of the photos or whatever that we put up was criticized and on a social platform. And the people that were criticizing us were other Christians. It's kind of like, we're trying to reach people that aren't going to church. And yet we're working against each other, just in that one way. We argue in churches about the style of music, or the color of walls and carpets, or what the pastor lives in, drives in, and wears. We argue about different things that we believe. We have over 30,000 denominations of church in this world. Isn't that amazing? 30,000 different denominations, groups of churches that believe differently, practice differently, think differently. We go to church based on a variety of personal preferences that we've created in our own mind. We go to church with people that look like us, think like us, act like us, dress like us, vote like us, spend and save like us. And when something doesn't go the way we like it, it's time to start another church. That's not why we started this church, though. One of the most notable observations, though, is from one of our heroes of the faith and a great leader in our country, Dr. Martin Luther King. And rather than quote him, I want you to listen to him as he shares about some of this divide.
I think that one of the tragedies of our nation, one of the shameful tragedies at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, is one of the most segregated hours, if not the most segregated hours, in Christian America. I definitely think the Christian church should be integrated, and any church that stands against integration and that has a segregated body is standing against the spirit and the teachings of Jesus Christ, and it fails to be a true witness. But this is something that the church will have to do itself. I don't think church integration will come through legal processes. I might say that my church is not a segregating church. It's segregated, but not segregating. It would welcome white members.
Well, sadly, it's almost 60 years later and not much has changed. The church is considered multi-ethnic or multiracial when it only needs to have 20% of its congregation not be the majority race. And in our country, this is 60 years after these words, there's only 7% of the churches in America that can even meet that criteria. In 2017, not only 7%, but even in this community, this is the most diverse community in Baltimore County, and less than 5% of the congregations in this community are a multi-ethnic or multiracial based on that statistic, needing to have just 20% be the non-majority race. You know, it's not only in the church, though. It's hard to do that because of the world we live in. Think about politics for a second. I know we don't want to talk about politics. It's not one of those things you like to talk about. But we live in an increasingly polarized society and community. And it's not just the church. It's in a lot of different ways. And so politics is one of those ways. In 1963, there was a president. You might know this president, JFK. Does that ring a bell to anybody? Hopefully it does. Do you know what party he was a part of? He was a Democrat. Well, the approval rating of the Republican Party for JFK in 1963 was 49%, meaning 49 out of 100 Republicans approved of the JFK presidency. Let's fast forward a little bit to 1990. A Republican president, who was George W. Bush, and the approval rating of the opposing party, which would be the Democratic Party, was 44%. So 44 out of 100 people approved of the George W. Bush presidency. Now let's fast forward to our last president, President Obama. Now what party did he represent?
Democrat.
Okay, so the Republican approval rating, get this, of President Obama was 14%. So then 14, you see how drastic that shift was? And so, and now even with Donald Trump being a Republican party, the current approval rating from the Democratic Party is 7%, which is still shocking that there's still 7% that approve of Donald Trump, but do you see the change and the shift in how polarized and divided the United States have become? We're not very united as the United States politically. We're not very united economically as well. The middle class is decreasing and shrinking in number. So why is that important if the middle class is shrinking in number? It's because the upper class is growing and the lower class is growing, and they move further and further away from each other, and so there's an economic divide that's becoming bigger in our culture. Media, people who watch MSNBC hate people who watch Fox News. And the other way around, people who watch Fox News hate people who watch MSNBC. There's statistics that show that people have defriended one another based on media choices and sharing things on Facebook, social media, based on, you know, they might post something from Fox News or MSNBC. People that are friends are no longer friends anymore because of some of these things. Let me just drop a couple names with you, see how they fit. You're going to have, there's going to be different things that you're going to feel and experience as I say these names. So Joe Flacco. All right, so people like Joe Flacco. So I think probably almost all of us in here, unless you're a Steelers fan or an opposing team of the Ravens, we like Joe Flacco. But how about Colin Kaepernick? Yeah, some of you said different things. That's a little tense. Some of you might have thought and felt different emotions. That's kind of the point of it all. How divided we can get with just a name. How about Abraham Lincoln? Good old Abe, we all like him. How about Donald Trump?
Yes.
There we go. There we go. Now we're getting real here. So I'm making my point. So, you know, and you're like, I can't believe that person said that. And the other person, I can't believe they said that. I'm making it awkward in here, right? And you're like, man, can I come back to this church? There's people there like that. That's the whole point of this all. This should be the one place where it's not like that. This should be the one place where you can vote for both people. And come, we should be ashamed of ourselves if it isn't. How about these words? Immigration. Black Lives Matter. Gun control. Ferguson. NFL protests. The list can go on. And all of these stir something different in all of us. There's different thoughts and emotions, and these just represent categories with much deeper issues than we can solve or talk about in one day, and even any of us can do. But instead of using inflammatory, unsympathetic, and insensitive comments, there's a better way to live in the light of these different events and issues in our country, in our world, in our communities, in our homes, possibly. See, I would agree with Dr. Martin Luther King that the place should be the church of all places where there should be integration. You know, he was a minister and he knew the heart of Jesus Christ, that those who would follow him would reflect the most diversity that exists under the sun. So that means we should worship with somebody that believes differently politically than we do. That's what it means. Like, I can't do that. Well, what does that reveal about what's in our heart? Because I don't think it's a problem with another political party. I think it's a problem with us. See, Jesus prayed a prayer. It's called the Lord's Prayer. It's instructive to us because it's how he said we should pray. And he said, and one of the phrases in that prayer is, pray that what would happen on earth would be as we see it in heaven. And so meaning what we see in heaven should be what we experience on earth. And so what does heaven look like? And this is what the book of Revelation, the last book of the Bible, says, that a great multitude that no one could number from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. There's a picture of people that look different, of people that sound different, of people that stand before the Lord in different places, in different life experiences that they've had. See, if the kingdom of heaven is to be displayed, all walks of life should be in the church. And as uncomfortable as it might be for us that somebody cheered or didn't cheer for one of those names, and what that might fuel in us, even anger, and do you not understand? Are you not sympathetic to how that affects me? The one place that is to be reflected that have people from all different walks of life is the church. The one place that needs the word same team is us. And I'm not just talking about the church down the street, you know, or the church around the corner, like, hey, they need to hear this. I'm talking about our church here at United, even though we're only in week 6 of this thing getting started. We need that. And I know that because I need this. Because I need same team as a husband when I can see my wife as an adversary instead of my partner. I could see this as a dad when I can see my children as interruptions to me instead of opportunities and investments to be made in. They can make a difference. I need this as a white pastor that leads a diverse church already, that I bring biases and preferences that I'm blind to, and I need voices in my life to help me. I don't have all the answers, but I am talking about me, and I'm talking about you that needs to hear these words, same team. We need to live more and more like this, not just here in church, but in our homes, in our communities, in our workplaces. And if we can acknowledge this, that is the best step and the best first step we can take, that we are the solution, that the reason why same team isn't happening, why there's not unity, it's because I've been a contribution to that. And me acknowledging that is one of the best first steps that we can take. See, if a United Church is different racially, politically, economically, generationally, ethnically, but worship the same God, I believe that not only will our lives be transformed, but I believe hundreds and thousands of other lives could be transformed as well. I believe this community can be transformed if we start to look like this, if churches in the community start to link arms together and live this way. I think that is happening in here at a pastor level, talking to other pastors and community here. That's happening, and that's a good thing. But some of us might think, is this really realistic? In light of the names you've dropped and how polarized our society and culture is right now, is this just wishful thinking? Is it really possible to experience? And I believe it's so because Jesus prayed it for us and because Jesus wants it for us. And we're going to look at a prayer from Jesus in the book of John. One of his followers is named John, and he wrote a book about the life of Jesus Christ. And so if you have a Bible with you, you can open up to John chapter 17. If you don't have a Bible with you, we have it on the screen for you to follow along. But you're going to look at this prayer. It's one of the longest prayers that Jesus prayed, and it's the last prayer that he prayed. It's one of the last prayers. It's the night before he died on the cross. He has this prayer that he goes into, and he says, my prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. So in verse 20, Jesus, this is the middle of the prayer because he's been praying for his 11 disciples that are in the room with him right now. He's been praying for them to have a great, strong relationship with God. But then he moves on. So I'm not just praying for them, but now I'm praying for everybody else who will ever follow me. So what does Jesus pray for everybody else that will ever follow Jesus? For forgiveness of sins, for help, for guidance and decisions, for provision, for protection. Those are all good things, but he doesn't pray for a single one of those things. And he prays for one thing, and he prays for one thing only, and he prays for it 3 times. He prays this, and we'll read it together, that all of them may be one. So all of any Christ followers, that they may be one. Father, just as you are in me and I am in you, that they may also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I've given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Now, any scholar or student of literature knows that the use of repetition means that you're trying to make a point. Have you ever heard the phrase, I heard you the first time? Yeah. Again, I see spouses turning and looking at one another. Heard you the first time. I hear that from you all the time. Like Jesus prays 3 times the same prayer. Oneness, complete unity. Because of how important this is. He's trying to make a point. And so who is he praying for? He's praying for all of them. He's not just praying for the Baptists or the Catholics, the Episcopalians or the non-denominationals or the Presbyterians. He's not praying for the American Christians or the European Christians or the African Christians or the Asian Christians or the Latino Christians. He's not just praying for the Republicans, Democrats, Independents, or Green Party. He's praying for all. And the Bible is written in a Greek language. And so the original word in Greek, all, the translation into English is, I'm not an expert in the Greek language at all, but a more literal way to define all is this, every single person, male, female, black, white, red, yellow, orange, short, tall, skinny, round, young, old, bad breath or good breath, extrovert, introvert, pleasant or pain in the butt, happy or melancholy, all. Listen, go on and on. The translation, it's nothing different than what it means in English. All means all. How about we say that together on the count of three? All means all. One, two, three. All means all. Who is Jesus praying for? He's praying for all people that would want to follow after Jesus Christ. For all of his followers to be united. And united doesn't mean uniformity, meaning like we all look and we're all the sameness. We have strength in our differences. We have strength in how we think and act and look. And the unity that he wants is those differences to come together and be united together. And there's two words that are key words. Why is this so important for Jesus? Why is he so interested that the church would be one? Why is he praying it three different times? His last prayer of all the things that he can pray for, and he prays for one thing. Why does he pray for this? And he uses these two words, so that. So I pray that they would be one, so that. And so that is like a purpose clause, meaning the purpose of what he just prayed for is so that this will happen. It's like an if-then statement. If this happens, then this is guaranteed. So if you say trick or treat, what happens? You get candy, right? So if you break it, then you? If you build it, then? That's right. All right. So those are if-then statements. And Jesus is saying, like, this is the if-then statement. If the church could be one, if all of my followers can get along with each other, can treat each other with respect and decency and love, then something amazing and profound will happen. The whole world will see and know and understand the love of God. That's the if-then statement. Essentially, Jesus is praying for unity so that everybody will know and be connected to God. You see, when men and women of different ages and diverse backgrounds walk together as one in Christ, that uniquely reflects the love of God to this world. That's what's happening in heaven should be happening on earth. So here's the deal. If United Church is truly united, which we have a passion to be, we will see people become connected to God. That's our mission. That's why we exist. But if we are not united, we will not fulfill our mission to help people come into a relationship with God. That's how simple it is. It dilutes and hinders the mission of why we exist as a church. But if we are united, we will be unstoppable to promote the love and goodness of God in this community and in this world. This past week, there was a World Series. Did anybody watch the World Series at all? Houston Astros won, another team in orange, sadly, not the Orioles. But in 1976, I'm not sure if you knew what baseball team were the champs that year. So the team was a very diverse team. I want to tell you a little bit about them. They were diverse. There were some African, Mexican, white players. Two of the players didn't speak any English, so the communication was tough. One had a weight problem. The star pitcher was nearsighted, which isn't always good for a star pitcher. One had anger management issues. The coach was an alcoholic. And not only that, none of the players were drafted. They were like the last picks to come onto this team. And yet this team in 1976 comes together and has huge ups and downs. I mean, it was a drama of a year because some of them would like, they would quit the team and then come back onto the team. There was fights and internal dissension among the team. And yet what happens through this team and their journey to their championship is they come together through all of their differences and they unite and work together. There's actually a movie that's based off of this story. And so maybe you've seen this team before, you've heard of this team. And so they are the Bad News Bears. Not a real team. But if you haven't seen this movie, that's their story. And they do, they win the championship. Nobody wanted them. They were the scrubs, they were the misfits. And yet, if they could be united, can't we? If this team came together, I think we can. And in a sense, the church is a bunch of misfits sometimes, the people that don't always fit together. well. And that's the beauty of it all. We weren't meant to fit together according to the world's standards, but according to somebody else's standards, if we fit together, something amazing can take place. And as United Church is in its infancy, we're like a six-week-old little baby here. And so I just saw a baby come through earlier, a couple of them with bottles. You know, formula put together. What's the formula for United? What's going to help strengthen us in unity? And I think it's a couple of things that we glean from the Bible as we strengthen one another and grow in oneness and unity. And that the first step that we need to add to this formula is uncommon friends. And by uncommon, I mean out of the ordinary people we might naturally gravitate towards, like the bad news bears. And none of those kids naturally gravitated towards one another. They were kind of forced onto this team together that none of them wanted to be on. But once upon a time, there was a version of the Christian faith that literally changed the world. And it's because of the group of people that it started with. Because after Jesus left, he had reached all of these different types of people. And when he left and his disciples start the church, they put a sign in the ground that says service at the high school at 10:35, right? So, no, not really. That's what we did here. But they did something like that. And they said, we're going to have a church service together. And when they showed up at the church, they had a master and a slave sitting next to each other. And they had a rich guy and a poor guy. And they had people from different nationalities and races all coming together. They had a Roman centurion, a tax collector, a fisherman, a doctor, a lawyer, all sitting in church together. And they didn't say, oh, you know what? Wow, this is a little weird or awkward right now. We're going to start different churches now based on where you've come from. So if you're the Jewish Christian, go down the road and worship over here. And if you're the Gentile Christian, go worship over here. You know, for all the masters, the people that own slaves, you're going to worship over here and the slaves will worship at that church over there. They didn't do that. They came together and they kind of had to come together because many of them were disowned by their family. They were kicked out of synagogues. They were betrayed by friends. And so they were kind of abandoned by some of the closest friends that they had, and they had to come together and start the church. And because they did that, a movement started of uncommon friends that changed the world. It's why we're here today. So the formula of unity and oneness here at United Church needs to be uncommon friends. When's the last time you sat down and ate a meal with somebody that looks different than you? When's the last time you got together and you hung out with people that might think or behave or act differently than you? We need to be a church that's okay with that. We're going to pursue and be intentional about that. In fact, this month, I want to encourage everybody here, myself included, grab a meal with somebody that is different from you, racially, culturally, ethnically, just somehow they are different from you, and listen to one another. Ask questions, hear their story, talk about the joys and challenges that they've had in their life. Talk about and ask about their spiritual upbringing and what that looked like, because it'll probably be different from yours, and learn. It could be somebody here in this room. We can get to know each other that way and pursue a new friend, or it could be somebody who you've known and lived next to for years or have worked with for years, but you've maybe never pursued a friendship with them. I want to encourage you, United Church, this month to make an uncommon friend, somebody who's not like you. But here's what happens when that takes place, is there's uncomfortable environments become created. Because if we're going to pursue as a church true diversity, people that we're going to rub shoulders with that aren't like us, it's going to get uncomfortable. If we're comfortable, that probably means we're just around people that are just like us. They look like us, they act like us, they spend like us, they think like us, and so forth. But if we're going to get uncomfortable, which I think we need to do here, I think that's a sign that we're pursuing uncommon friends. Because in the early church, what did happen was they didn't start different churches. Jews and Gentiles were these two major groups, and the Jewish Christians were Christians that were always loved by God. They were God's chosen people throughout history up until the time that Jesus came. And then all of a sudden, Jesus came for other people that were not just Jewish. And so you have these two groups of people coming together, worshiping, and the one group, the Jewish Christians, are importing all of their cultural background. This is what it means to be a Christian. You're going to have to eat this type of food. You're going to have to do these certain things in order to now be a Christian. And there's this little debate in a book of the Bible, and there's a real helpful statement that helps us to see this difference. It says, some of the believers who belonged to the party of the Pharisees, this is the Jewish Christians, stood up and said, the Gentiles must be circumcised and required to keep the law of Moses. And so, no dude was excited about this change to follow Jesus. All right? So not only was this like a cultural baggage, but it's like, I don't want to do that to follow Jesus. He never talked about that when he was here. I didn't sign up for this. But there's a serious debate that's taking place because there's an uncomfortable environment. See, it got uncomfortable when I dropped some of those names earlier, didn't it? Do you want to be somebody that presses through the uncomfortableness to get unity, or do you want to go somewhere where it's comfortable? See, here we can reflect the early church, because what they did in this situation is they sat down and they had a conversation. They talked this through. I think that's the thing we need to do. If we're to pursue this uncommon friendship in an uncomfortable environment, we need to have a conversation. We need to acknowledge the tension that exists. We need to acknowledge the background that we come from that biases us in ways that we don't know or understand even. We need to listen to that friend. See, we're seeking to do that as a church. And I don't want to just talk about church things, but we are at a church. And so as a church, one of the things we've recognized is that we meet in a facility, in a school, where students here, there's over 50 languages represented as the first languages of some of the students that go to school here in Owings Mills. And we only have a service in English. Do we really want to reflect our community? We're having a conversation, and it's a hard conversation. Sure, you're only 6 weeks out of the gates. Don't be so hard on yourself. But this is something we need to pursue if we're really going to be a united church. There's conversations in some of our outreaches. We've showed up in the community and done certain community service projects and tried to bless the community. One of the places that we've gone to, if you've seen us at the Metro Center, we show up every Monday morning and give out free coffee from 6 to 9 o'clock. But there's two sides of the tracks at the Metro stop. And on one side of the tracks, we're not able to be there because it's illegal. And then on the other side, we're able to be there. But that's where everybody parks their car because they can have enough money to own a car and pay car insurance. Because on the other side of the track, people can't afford a car. And so there's an economic divide that exists in our community at the train stop. It's literally the other side of the tracks. And we can't reach both communities because we can't even be in one. But we can be in the other legally as we give out free coffee. When we've gone to some of the different community events, we've started to notice the people that are at these events. Some are more or less diverse. So I remember being at Music on Main Street up in Reisterstown. It was a great time. We set up some things for kids. We gave out cotton candy, had games for kids to do. It was great because I have kids. And so we're all hanging out as a family, meeting people in the community. Thought it was a great event. Until I talked to one of my black friends who said, I would never go there unless if the church wasn't there, I wouldn't go there to hang out. It's totally white culture. Everybody there is white, listening to white music, and it's always white music on Music on Main Streets. Not to down Music on Main Street. It's just the reality of the community that we live in. Pay attention when you drive around, when you go to different stores, when you go to different events. And as a church, if we want to pursue unity and be one together, we're going against the tide of the culture of our own community even. But we need to have the conversation, just be blunt about it. Be blunt about the fact that I'm a white pastor that wants to see a church come together that is united from all different types of races. And I can't fully understand what it means to not be white. And so I just have to say that. And some people have to be okay with being patient with me through some of that. We have to have the conversation. We have to have the conversation about our community, about wanting to grow to be a truly multi-ethnic, multi-racial church. See, it only takes, did I share that 20% is what you need to have a multi-racial church? I don't care about that number. We've already met that number, but I don't care about numbers. I care about hearts that really believe this stuff. Hearts that are truly united and in this together, that it can acknowledge the tension, be okay with the uncomfortableness, and say, I want this so much because I know there's a greater purpose to see Jesus Christ and his great love made known through this community. And the law that will drive this is an unselfish love. See, Jesus summarized all the laws in the Bible with one, to love one another. And this can be pursued when we love unselfishly, because Jesus says this to his disciples. He says, so now I'm giving you a new command, love each other. Just as I have loved you, you need to love each other. For your love for one another will prove to the world that you're my disciples. Did you see that last sentence? What's going to prove that you're my disciples? Being right? No. Being part of this church instead of that church? No. It's your love for that church, even if you don't go to that church. And your love for that church. And your love for everybody in this church. Your love for other people that follow Jesus Christ, regardless of what church you go to, regardless of what experience you prefer, that is going to communicate to the world the love of God. See, we can't all be right, but we can all be one. So in that tense moment that I talked about where the Jews and Gentiles got together and kind of had it out over how do you become a Christian, they worked it out. The Jewish Christians showed unselfish love. And they said, you know what? You're right. What we're bringing to the table, it's our cultural baggage. It's not what Jesus taught. And they laid it down. And that's what we need to do. We need to lay certain things down. We need to lay certain things down about our beliefs. And so that's why we have this statement around here that helps us with that. It says, in essentials, unity, in non-essentials, liberty, and in all things, love. Meaning there will be things that we hold on tightly to here at United Church. That Jesus is the only way to have a relationship with God. That he died on the cross for our sins and we can be completely forgiven because of that death and only because of that death. And we learn about that through the Bible. A story written about God's love, and it's a story that's simple and clear and understandable and has authority to bear in our life. And we hold on tightly, like we cannot let go, we cannot compromise on some of those things. So in the essentials of the Christian faith, there is unity, and we have to unite and be one on these. But in non-essentials, there's liberty. So there's things that we might believe that the Bible just isn't clear on. People for hundreds of years, great men and women of the faith, have debated back and forth and haven't been able to land on the same page. And we're just not going to be able to, we're not going to say here like, hey, we got it figured out now. We're never going to say that. More often than not, you're going to hear an answer from us saying, I don't know. And we're just going to be okay with that. We're going to be, you know what, I don't know, but it could be this. And that's what it looks like. And then it says, all things love. See, Jesus didn't sit around and debate with people. He loved people. We want to dig deep here. We're going to have small groups and we're going to dig deep and talk about truths of the Bible, but we're not going to be punks about it and kick people out based on what we believe. And be like, oh, you disagree with me? All right, let's talk about it. We're going to love one another because that's what we're talking about, unselfish love. You know, one of the areas the church has always been divided over is music. You know, what kind of music do you have? Do you have music at all? How loud is it? How soft is it? How do you sing the same chorus over and over? Do you sing songs with lots of words? You know, some churches, you know, they don't have any musical instruments. So they believe just sing a cappella. And so there's been churches and church splits based on music. You know, and sometimes you can say, do you clap? Do you lift hands? Do you get excited? See, maybe coming here and part of the music experience has been uncomfortable for you. But think about when you went to a concert last or a sporting event. Were people excited about what was happening on stage or on the field? And some people jumping up and clapping and shouting. And were there some people that were sitting quietly as they listened or watched too? Because there's different personalities. So if we're going to have uncommon friends and uncomfortable environments, an unselfish way to love one another is to be okay if somebody seems pretty excited about Jesus here when they're singing. Some of the things they're doing with their bodies, like, that's interesting. Might be some things that are uncomfortable for us. And I would say that's a good thing. And maybe you're that person that's really excited. And you're like, why is that person sitting still? It's like, well, people can be in different personalities of extrovert and introvert, of response or non-response. People can be in different places in their faith journey with, I don't even believe a thing you're saying this morning. To, I'm all in. I agree with all of that. That's the type of church we want to create here. And it's an unselfish love. See, there's so many things that we can hold loosely to. That's why in all things, love is so important. See, our ability to love one another is going to be the megaphone of God's love to this community if we can get this right. So imagine a place where people were skeptical about what we believed, but they were envious about how we treated each other. Like, I don't know that I believe you, but the way you guys treat each other, that's awesome. And not just in a room of a church building or a school that wants to be a church building for a Sunday morning, but even church to church. Like, hey, we love that church. We don't do church the same way we do, but we love them. That pastor is top notch. He is an awesome guy. And we are only going to say good things about other churches. Because people that are skeptical, that's one of the reasons why they're skeptical. There's so many of you. And if you say bad things about each other, it just continues to affirm why they should be skeptical. And they're right. So let us not do that. Let us treat one another that follow Jesus Christ with unselfish love. Because when we do this, we can have an unimaginable impact in a community. And we want to do everything possible as a church to reach people that are not following God. I've heard one pastor say he wants his church to do everything possible short of sin to reach people that aren't Christians. So in one of those things, and one of those ways that we do that is through unity. You know, the early church with no building, no funding, lots of persecution, had this misfit, you know, team come together, like the Bad News Bears, and start an amazing movement in our world. And our world right now is sick and tired about hearing about the love of Jesus because they want to see it, finally. They want to see us love one another and respect one another. And United, we have an amazing opportunity with this formula right away, week six, as we shape and create a culture here to be a group of people that are committed to this. And it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be comfortable. But if we pursue this, we are promised that God's love will be displayed through us and people's lives will be changed. So to sum up everything I've been saying, just in one statement, is same team living, the shout that we need to hear today, hopefully a little more graciously than some parents on the sidelines, pursues uncommon friends. Will you do that this month? That puts them in an uncomfortable environment where we need an unselfish love to see unimaginable results. Do you want to be a part of that? We're seeking to do that here. We'd love to invite you into that. We'd encourage you. We want to help you in that. And we don't have all the answers to do that. We're learning together. And where we start in learning this is from Jesus Christ. Today is an invitation to embrace the one thing that we have in common here. And that's Jesus. And we're going to close and wrap up our time by taking communion together, which is the way Jesus taught his followers to remember him and to remember what's most important for us every Sunday is that he gave his life. And there's just two little cups and that are on top of each other, one with a little cracker and the other with some juice to remember the body and the blood of Jesus that was broken and the blood that was shed so that we could have a relationship with God. And this is just a remembrance for us of the reason why we can be united together. And so communion is going to start on this side. We're going to pass trays down. You can just take a cup out and take communion in your own time and reflect on God's love for you. Maybe today's the day that Jesus would invite you into a relationship and you say yes to him. So take communion and enjoy that moment that you can have with God in your own seat.